We all know that tools like ChatGPT have really empowered developers to tackle bigger problems. Are you using Tailwind CSS and need a login page? Try asking Chat, what is the HTML for a login page with the login, username, password, and a button in its own section in the center of a page? It will literally give you the first pass version of it. But how far can we push this? Fred Tubiermont may have taken it farther than most. He built a functioning SaaS product with paying customers by using only ChatGPT and Python. It's fascinating to hear his story and see what he's built. This is Talk Python to Me, episode 459, recorded February 19th, 2024.
Are you ready for your host? Here he is.
You're listening to Michael Kennedy on Talk Python to Me, live from Portland, Oregon, and this segment was made with Python.
Welcome to Talk Python to Me, a weekly podcast on Python. This is your host, Michael Kennedy. Follow me on Mastodon, where I'm at mkennedy, and follow the podcast using at TalkPython, both on bostodon.org. Keep up with the show and listen to over 7 years of past episodes at talkpython.fm. We've started streaming most of our episodes live on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel over at talkpython.fm/YouTube to get notified about upcoming shows and be part of that episode. This episode is sponsored by Mailtrap, an email delivery platform that developers love. Try for free at mailtrap.io. And it's brought to you by us over at TalkPython Training. Did you know that we have over 250 hours of Python courses? Yeah, that's right. Check them out at talkpython.fm/courses. Fred, welcome to Talk Python to Me.
So great to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about this app that you've built using highly powered by AI and in different ways. It's both powered by AI, but also largely built with AI. And I think it's going to give people an interesting look into what is possible these days.
What is possible and the journey of a middle-aged coder or so, maybe.
That's really an interesting thing to discuss. And maybe we could just start a little bit with the introduction about yourself and then talk a bit about that. So before we dive into talking about how you use ChatGPT to largely build this app that is a SaaS product service on the internet, people pay, subscribe to, which, you know, is the dream of many people. It's awesome. With AI, you know, just tell people a bit about yourself and then I want to talk about this journey.
It's a long story because I'm turning 50 in June 2024. So if you listen to this before June 2024, I will be 49. After, I will be 50. So yes, that will be
you're a spring chicken. I'm older than you, Fred.
You're older than me. Okay, cool. So I found someone older than me to talk to. Oh, that's fine.
You can still write code into your 50s. Let me tell you, the keyboard still works. It's amazing.
And I started when I was 48, but maybe we get back to this later. So originally, my professional journey started as an interpreter, Russian, English to French. So I graduated as an interpreter, so in languages. And then I started being involved in music. I was head of sponsorship for a big music festival in Belgium. I had rock venues, live music venues for a few years. And then I started being involved in tech as head of product, head of paid acquisition for a few startups. I had my own startups. I exited one startup in the fintech space in the early 2000s. I had a circus for 2 years. That's quite
a circus.
That's quite an interesting story. Yes, family circus with 4 big tents, 8 tons of equipment. So that was quite a story.
Was this like Cirque du Soleil, or was it with animals, or what kind of?
It was more like, I would say, like Cirque du Soleil, but at a smaller scale, of course.
Sure, okay.
But four tents and circus artists and actors and musicians. And that was, yes, an original show, an original story. I also produced rock bands. Maybe I can give a shout out to one of the bands that I love that I contributed to, the Boxer Rebellion. Maybe you heard about them, the Boxer Rebellion.
Yeah.
It's a British band based here in London, but with a singer from Nashville, Tennessee, Nathan Nicholson. So I was involved in music, in tech, I mean, in all of those things. And I think the project that we're going to talk about is kind of a good mix between music, tech, and all my passions. Yeah. I was also a radio DJ for years, so that's why.
That's the audio side, right? That kind of brings you some together in the music, I suppose, as well.
Exactly.
Amazing. You know, listening to tell the story, first of all, what a diverse set of experiences. That must have been really fun.
It's not a career. That's the problem. Unemployable.
Yeah, that's... But in terms of thinking about products and coding, I know when I experience different areas, I always see like, oh, this is could be way better and that could be way better. And why is that so hard? Surely we could create some software to fix these things. You must have had a lot of ideas about programs you would like to see and stuff you'd like to work on.
And multiple times, the solution for me was to hire people to do it. I had my own startups in the past, and I always had a team of, let's say, 2 to 5 developers working for me when we were doing that. So I kind of understood all the structure, the architecture of the apps, but I'd never really coded myself. So I was always relying on other people. The difference today is that I spent most of my days coding, which is quite different.
Yeah, and you said you started coding when you were 48.
Yes.
roughly almost 2 years ago.
Yes.
That's awesome. You know, I do hear from a lot of people or see comments like, oh, I think I'm too old to learn this, or, oh, you can never, you have to have done this when you were a kid or maybe gotten a degree in college. Otherwise, you're doomed. You know, you surely have an alternative viewpoint on that, given your success.
I thought it would be like that also for me, because I would say I'm quite a perfectionist. So if I learn something, I want to achieve something with what I learn. And the problem, the issue with code for me for a long time had been that, okay, I could go through the basic tutorials, the first lessons, you know, watching some videos or reading some tutorials. It was difficult for me to really achieve something meaningful, something that I could really share, that could become a product. Because you always end up doing the same little exercises and little tutorials, and that doesn't end up anywhere.
You learned how to do a loop, but then that doesn't really help you get any closer to an app, right?
How to do a little to-do list or a little calculator or, you know, something very simple, but nothing that would be worth sharing as a product and especially as a paid product. So I always thought, okay, if I want to build a SaaS, the only solution for me is to rely on a freelancer or on an agency or on a team of people. I was doing it until I discovered.
That's a big risk. And it's also not that easy to hire a team to build your product when you're still trying to figure out what a product is and all these things, right?
Even if you hire non-expensive developers, it has still a cost. And if you want to, you know, just if you don't want to take too much risk, and if you want to test your product to see if you have product market fits, I mean, you don't want to spend $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 on a product. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. And the alternative that people are most of the time advocating these days is no code. So it's building stuff with Bubble, which is pretty popular.
You've got Retool. They've been a sponsor of the show before.
But Retool, obviously, that's pretty nice, but mostly for internal apps. And also, you can just connect stuff through Zapier, through Make, formerly Integromat. You can achieve something, but you don't have the control on the UI. You don't really have the control exactly on what's happening behind the scenes. And you don't have the flexibility that you have if you really code yourself. So if you can really get your hands dirty and code on your own. So I used also to be a strong advocate of no code. So I was using, and I'm still using, firstly Zapier and then later on Make. But once I discovered Python in August, September 2022, then everything changed for me, because then I could really start doing my own stuff. And I started with backend stuff, with backend scripts for, let's say, to create competitive intelligence scripts, things like that. And I slowly moved into frontend. But first, for a few months, it was mostly local scripts on my computer.
That's really interesting. The low code, no code stuff is super powerful. I think it does make it possible for people to build apps. I have a friend who built a platform a little bit on top of something that's kind of a low code thing. And it's what they're doing is really impressive. And they've got lots of customers and it's going really well. It's a vibrant business. It's always you're beholden to whatever that platform does. If the platform has downtime, you have downtime. If they're changing their feature set in a way that doesn't quite line up with what you're trying to do. Well, that's too bad because, you know, that they've changed their direction or whatever. And it's really powerful, but it's also a little bit of a risk, right? To be built on top of that.
A risk, yes. But for me, it was even more, I would say, the arbitrage was even more about flexibility. So when you code something on your own with Python, JavaScript, as I'm doing now, it's faster in many cases than trying to figure out how to connect, let's say, Airtable with something else. Then you've got to think about how the data is structured in Airtable, how the data is to be structured on the other side, and then how to connect them together. Sometimes it's easier if you just have a SQLite database or MySQL database, and then if you do your own stuff on your own without trying to connect existing SaaS together. It was more about flexibility for me. The main reason why I switched almost completely from no code to coding.
That's really interesting. I guess one more that would be worth considering is price. Some of these low-code, no-code platforms are really powerful, but when you start to look at price for a decent number of users using your app, a lot of them are built for internal use cases. They're not really built for having a bunch of multi-tenant style users and so on, but also they can just get real expensive real quick.
Yes, because they are based usually on the amount of transactions or scenarios or zaps that can run. So if you want to transfer one piece of data from one software to another one, it's one transaction. If you have, let's say, 10,000 transactions per month for a certain price, then yeah, you can run out of transactions pretty quickly. And it's very quickly you end up paying $25, $30, $40 for a pretty low amount of transactions, API calls basically between the different SaaS.
And if you glue them together, one tool connects to another, which connects to another, then you've got to pay for kind of the traffic and the activity in all three. It's not just like, well, I'm talking to my database. I'm now talking to some other service that's got, you know, something going on.
And the fact is also that there are a few tools that enable you to create a UI user interface for your product, but you're limited to the building blocks usually that they offer, even if you can tweak them with some code. And it's a bit the same, I would say it's a bit also the same issue that I've experienced on WordPress, let's say. The problem is that if you use something like Bubble and you want to build something with it, you bring to your app or the mothership, the core of the big app of Bubble as a whole, when you want to build something on top of a platform like that. It's a lot of things that you don't really need for your specific apps, but that have to be there because the whole engine has to run. That's usually what you also experience with WordPress, for instance, when you have a site on WordPress. Maybe sometimes, or even most of the time, you don't need that big engine. You could work with a static website with a few HTML, CSS, JavaScript pages. That would be much lighter. There would be less code to activate to have your website up and running. So in terms of performance, if you can code your own stuff, I think it's also a good reason to choose coding versus no code, if you can do it.
Totally agree. Price, performance, control, all those things. That said, you do have to understand more about the world. Like one thing we were coordinating around is just like understanding web app architecture. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you feel about it, but I feel like a lot of the guidance that is out there is too intense. There's too many moving parts. Everyone thinks you need to have some kind of background worker service like Celery, and you need a caching layer, and you need this, and you need that. And it just starts to be like, whoa, this is like running Netflix. You know what I mean? Whereas a lot of times what you need is a back end, a front end, and some kind of data store, and that's it. And in that data store, you mentioned it before, the data store can be, in the early days, could be SQLite, which doesn't require another server or another thing to maintain and connect and secure. And it can just be a file that you back up.
Exactly.
While you're proving out the idea, right? So maybe you're coming from a place where you weren't a DevOps expert. You know, like, how'd this transition go for you?
When I started developing an app, for some reason, I came across Flask as a solution for Python. So I started developing the app on Flask. What I like about Flask is that if you compare it, let's say you use Flask, and then for the pages you use HTML, CSS, and vanilla JavaScript. What I like is that you can deploy an app which comes from a single folder, and you've got everything there, your main Flask file, and then all the, let's say, the sub files in Python with all the business logic that you can isolate in one file or another. It's one project. And then you deploy the project to GitHub, and then let's say you connect GitHub to Railway. I'm using Railway for my deployment. So you connect GitHub to Railway, and then once you update your code in PyCharm or in Visual Studio, then you have the automatic deployment to Railway. But it's one project. If you want to decouple completely the backend from the frontend, let's say you work with something like Next.js, for instance, and then you want to have a backend in something else, then you've got to have multiple instances and connect them together. It becomes more complicated. But if you want to create something simple, you can keep it simple with one single Flask web app. And that's what I've been doing so far. Most of the AI Jingle Maker that I've been building since September 23 is a Flask web app. So it's one project, one big project. It's one project. It's interesting that you mentioned Celery a few moments ago, because I'm about to ship a new app, which is coming in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I think. And that's the first time after almost 18 months of development that I've considered using something like that, because I needed it for performance reasons to process something.
Something you want to start off in the background and get back to, and just let it be done later, right? Yeah.
And it was not that easy. We had a discussion with someone who is amazing on the Discord of Railway 2-3 days ago, because if you're deploying things on Railway, you would usually use, that's what they advise you to do, as on Heroku, a proc file. And the proc file, you've got the start commands that will start your project. But on Heroku, which is a competitor of Railway, you can start both the web app and the worker in the same file. But you can't do that on Railway. You've got theoretically to have two different projects, which kind of defeats the purpose.
You kind of deploy them both, right? But then you get to more coordination issues.
Yeah, but fortunately, and there is a discussion on the Discord between me and one of their guys there, they had a way to create a custom JSON for me, which managed to start both the web app and the worker in the same deployment. But I had to fight, to be honest with you, for like 4 or 5 hours to find a solution. Because sometimes the problem, and that's the issue that I've seen a lot, is that traditional developers, like professional developers, not people like me, not random guys like me, usually they assume that the people that they're supposed to explain things to know much more than what they do. And so they just write a few instructions, like some cryptic instructions that nobody really understands. And they would assume that everyone reading those instructions would understand what they have to do to, let's say, use this worker service, for instance. But that's not the case.
I totally agree. This portion of Talk Python to Me is brought to you by Mailtrap, an email delivery platform that developers love. An email sending solution with industry-best analytics, SMTP and email APIs, SDKs for major programming languages, and 24/7 human support. Try for free at mailtrap.io. You know, it's kind of the curse of knowledge. Like once you know all of these things, it's really hard to remember. Oh yeah. Dylan, you just run that in Docker and then link it and set up a network over there. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I don't know how to do that. I'm just trying to run my Python app. Like you're bringing a whole new thing in that you think makes it sound easy, and it makes it sound real hard to me. But I totally agree. This is a problem.
So many moving pieces. When you start coding, I mean, obviously you know that because you've been in this game for much longer than me. But once you start coding, there are so many little things that you have to know to make this thing work. So it starts with how to just configure GitHub and connect it to your...
How to use Git? if you have a Git conflict, you might be like, well, this is done. I can't do anything else anymore. It's broken.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's really overwhelming when you're new, right?
There's a lot. And that's where AI today helps you, because in most cases, if you know how to talk with the AI, you will get answers that are much easier to understand than what you would have on Stack Overflow, for instance.
I agree. It's very interesting how helpful it is. I think it's a good time to about jump into that. But before we do, tell people about Railway a bit. How does this work? I haven't used Railways before.
It's a platform where you can deploy your apps, basically. It connects to your GitHub GitHub account. It's not only, I mean, you have on Railway not only a possibility to deploy your Flask apps or other types of apps also, but they also offer all the database aspect. So you can spin a Redis database. You can have a MySQL database. I think they also have Mongo. I mean, they have most of the formats that you can expect. And the great thing is that everything is on the same platform. Let's say that I've got another project I'm involved with a real developer. Hi to Alex, if he listens to this podcast, a professional developer. For that project, for instance, we have an app on Heroku. We have a database on MongoDB Atlas, and we have the files uploaded to S3, to Amazon S3 for the file storage. On Railway, you can, at least that's what I do, you can have at the same time the deployment of the app, so which replaces Heroku, and you can have the database also together. And the cool thing is that they are, I would say, even physically at the same location. So in terms of performance, it's pretty easy to handle. And it's very user-friendly. I mean, very, very easy to use. From what I saw, even easier to understand than Heroku. And I tried also some things like Vercel, or I use for some project also, but that's more for static website, Netlify. But for this type,
Netlify is fantastic for static.
Static, Netlify is just amazing, and just the one where you can just drag and drop a project, for instance, for a static website, so easy. But for a more multi-tenant, dynamic, web app like the Jingle Maker, Railway was really cool. And as you can see from the presentation, it's very user friendly.
It definitely is, and the pricing is actually really decent. They have a free trial, and then $5 a month.
Yeah,
but that gets you 8 gigs of RAM and 8 CPUs per service. That is really good.
I started it on the OB plan, and I think that today, just to give you an idea, with roughly 500 users coming to the app per day, and a lot of them using the product, I pay for that roughly $15 a month.
Incredible.
For both the app deployment and the database, which is in MySQL for Jingle Maker.
That's pretty impressive. Good one to know about. This is cool.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
They have good Python support.
Yes, very good. And they have, as I said, like most people do today, a Discord server monitored also by volunteers. And there was a guy the other day, I didn't even know he was not part of the official team of Railway, and it really helped me. He wrote some code for me to make this thing work with Celery. So it was really, really amazing. And it was on a Sunday in the evening. So really nice.
Yeah, that's amazing. One thing I just want to give a shout out to that I came across recently that's interesting is Coolify.
Coolify.
Which is, it's self-hosted Heroku, Netlify, Vercel alternative. And you just get pushed to it. I don't know if it's better than this, though. Because you got to have a decent server to run it on. You got to run the Docker stuff and whatnot to sort of do it. But yeah, anyway, speaking of interesting deployments.
Yeah, you're going to manage also. Because the other day, I think it was 10 days ago, there was a DDoS attack, I think, against Railway for the European part of their network. But they were very quick at jumping on it and managing all of that and doing all the mitigation against it. If you run your own service, then you've got to take care of all of that on your own, all the security and all of that.
There's benefits, but there's also drawbacks there. All right, let's talk about, I think the right way to start talking about this, how you're using AI and the journey you went through. I mean, we've talked a lot about the foundations already, but let's talk about your app. You mentioned a couple of times AI Jingle Maker. Tell people what it does.
It's a web app that you can find on AIJinglemaker.com. And if you enter the app, you can create your own sweepers, radio jingles, podcast intros, audio promos, as if you were playing with Lego bricks, I would say. Mm-hmm. It's not the usual DAW experience. Like if you've been using things like GarageBand or FL Studio or Pro Tools to edit your audio, you can imagine those waves that you've got to move around to create your jingles or your sweepers. If you're using, for instance, the open source Audacity software also on your computer, you can do that. But still, you've got to know how to move these things around and you know how to play with the volume, the fade in, the fade out, the reverb, the chorus, the flanger. I mean, all the effects. And I mean, it's not that easy for many people. And so I thought that I could build something that made it as easy as pressing on a few buttons. That's the idea of the product. So the way you use it when you enter the product, you've got four different parts. You've got the intro, the background, the outro, and the voiceover, which is on top of the background. And the voiceover, you've got now you've got three different options. You've got the possibility to record your own voice. So I rebuilt a voice recorder, an online voice recorder, where you can quickly record your voice, add a few effects, and then, boom, use that as your voiceover. You can also upload an existing recording that you have on your computer. So if you've got something that you recorded with your with FL Studio or something else, you can upload it and use it as a voiceover. Or you can use AI. So I'm connected to a bunch of text-to-speech API, so I didn't develop the models myself. I'm not someone smart enough to develop a foundational model, but I'm connected to the APIs, and you can pick one of the voices. You can write your text, generate the voiceover, and once you have the voiceover, you just select it. And when you have the voiceover, you choose a background behind it. So let's say groovy music, house music, rock music, romantic music, whatever. You've got some pre-made sounds in the app. You choose an intro, an outro, and then you press on generate jingle. And in 5 seconds, you've got the jingle. That's basically the idea.
I'll put in the jingle so people will know exactly what this sounds like. Yeah, I'll put it in right now.
Time. This is Martin Superstar, your number one favorite DJ in New York City.
It's really cool, and it's something that I've seen people hire voiceover actors on, like Fiverr and stuff like that. They'll maybe pay $30 to have somebody do a couple of trials and throw some music on top of, or something like that, right?
And I'm a voiceover artist on Fiverr. I'm doing that also. So I know exactly what it is.
Let me see if I can automate my job away.
It was not really the idea of automating completely the job away. It was more like the how can you create something that's self-service and that can meet the needs of people, as you said, who don't want to spend $50 or $100 for something, but who want to have an easy way to create basic sweepers, jingles, or some other things. And the first target was mostly indie radio stations or small podcasts. But then I saw many brands coming, like I wouldn't say like not the big brands, but small brands coming, like apparel brands or coffee shops. Or I had the other day a bar in Ibiza signing up and paying for credits to generate a promo for the bar in Ibiza. So yeah, it's not only radio stations and podcasts. It's also anyone who wants to create a promo for their business. So that's also one of the services. And when I started, it was only short sweeper jingles, radio station IDs, stuff like that. But then I added something which is called the promo maker, which you have in the jingle maker, where you can create something which is up to 30 seconds long. So more like a radio ad. That's and there you can also use AI. It's connected to OpenAI, to be honest, but you can also use AI to generate the text of your promo. So you just put the name of your business, what you're selling, your service, your product. Then it will suggest the text. Then you choose the voice, generate the AI voice, and then you add the sounds, and then it's finished. So let's say in 20 seconds, you've got an audio ad. So that's the promise for the promo maker.
It's a cool app, and it's really impressive to look at this and think that you built this with less than a year of Python or really any coding experience, right? Roughly that amount?
To put things really in perspective so that people know what they can expect if they start their coding journey. So I started coding in Python in September, October 2022. For a few months, as I said, I was mostly coding scripts on my computer that helped me in my daily business, because I didn't tell you in the beginning, but most of my activity, it's online marketing. It's working for startups and bigger companies also. So I need scripts, you know, for competitive intelligence, for SEO, for even content production, this type of thing. So I created a lot of scripts locally on my computer before considering the front end part. Then that's when I discovered Flask. I was just before the summer of 2023. And yes, the first version of the Jingle Maker that I launched, it was just on the home page. You couldn't basically tweak anything. There were just four different jingles, and you just put the name of your radio station, you press on generate, and it generated one thing, the same for everyone. And it started getting some traction between May 2023 and August. And then I said, okay, I'm going to really dive into this project and develop something more sophisticated. I started working on that on a Monday in September. It was released on the Friday, the V2.
And I got to tell you, your website now looks really nice. You've done a lot of good design work on it as well in the last couple of months.
Yeah, it has evolved, because maybe you saw it for the first time when we decided to do this podcast. It was a white page. The logo was the same, but it was different. Originally, it was only in Material Design. I was using Material Design via the CDN from Google. But then I wanted to use Tailwind. The new version that you see is using Tailwind, so people might recognize the Tailwind vibe. And I worked quite a lot on this thing that, okay, we said it's audio, so people don't see it. But if you go on the website, you will see it. There is this rotating list of things that you can create with the with the product. It was inspired by some code that I found, but I had to retweak it for, you know, make it responsive and all of that. And you know, also a big shout out to my son, who is 18, who is learning Python a lot. He coded a few things recently. He's coding something to play darts at the moment, like to calculate the scores in darts. And 2 months ago, he said to me, "Dad, your site is nice, but it looks ugly. So could you make something that looks better?" I said, yeah, but you know, I kind of like it. I said, no, that it's not the way it should be. So do something better. I know you can do it. So that's why also we've got something which looks better today, thanks to my son, Maxim.
It's a huge improvement from where it started. So nice work on that.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some of the techniques that you used here. To, first of all, what LLM did you use to go on this journey?
When I started, I wasn't even aware of GitHub Copilot. So I started only with ChatGPT. I was an early premium user of ChatGPT. So I started paying the $20 very, very early for GPT Plus. So I started using ChatGPT. So basically switching between the ChatGPT UI and the IDE. I started using PyCharm. So that's the first one I used. So I was creating some code in ChatGPT and then jumping to PyCharm, test the code, and then if there was a bug, coming back to ChatGPT. So this back and forth journey.
Did you ask it at the beginning, how do I make a Flask app? Or what did you ask it in the beginning? Like, how do I make a Flask app? How do I make a Flask app that does audio, AI? Like, what did you...
I knew that I wanted to use Flask. So the first thing that you would ask is to ask ChatGPT for a boilerplate of a Flask web app. And it will give you pretty quickly the basic building blocks. I don't know if it will give you straight away the architecture with a template inside of the templates folder, but no, it gives you here
hello world.
Yeah, return hello world on the page. But then if you know that you need HTML, then you will ask ChatGPT to tweak it to render index.html from the templates folder. And there you see, there it starts. And it gives you some boilerplate for the HTML that you put in the templates folder. And then you learn that you need ideally to have some JavaScript in a JavaScript file, and that you need some CSS in a CSS file, and that those two files will be in the static folder of a Flask web app. So now I've got, let's say, my routine. I've got all of that ready. And if I start a new app, I don't even need, obviously, ChatGPT. I just create my structure. I put index.html, script.js, styles.css. But then what you can also ask ChatGPT to do, for instance, is if you've got your HTML page, you can say, restyle this HTML page with Tailwind CSS using the CDN, for instance, and it will give you a full restyling. And then you can ask it, okay, I want on this page four buttons, and those four buttons should do X, Y, Z. And then you start moving into the JavaScript part of it for the interactions on the page. And the interesting thing maybe, which would explain also why I haven't really started using Next.js or Vue or things like that, is that by default, for some reason, you've got to ask OpenAI why. Maybe because of some legacy importance of vanilla JavaScript. But if you ask ChatGPT to start creating some interactions on an HTML page, it won't just tell you, okay, you know, these days people use React or Next.js or something like that. So maybe you could or you should consider that. It will go deep into vanilla JavaScript. And after developing the Jingle Maker for a few months, I showed it to my friend Alex, who is this developer I was talking about earlier, who has graduated, I would say, from vanilla JavaScript to React. And he looked at my code and said, man, that's crazy. It's all vanilla JavaScript. There's not a single line of React. So everything in your app, it's lines and lines and lines of JavaScript.
That's a benefit and a drawback. Because
he said that he would not even be able to write it this way from scratch today.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not something that he would really consider doing because it's more verbose. There's more stuff to write to achieve what you want to achieve. But the thing is that with ChatGPT or today with a GitHub Copilot embedded in the IDE, even if it's longer, that's not a problem because you don't write a single line of code. I think it's important to point that out is that in the AI Jingle Maker, there is not one single line of code that I wrote. Not one.
That's insane.
There's not one, not a single line of code that I typed, you know, from the first curly bracket to the last curly bracket. Nothing. Everything is written like that. Yesterday, for instance, I was working on something completely different for a friend who is also a client. We're working on a Gmail add-on. So I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you're using AppScript from Google, and then I got to create a manifest and blah, blah. And I didn't know anything about Gmail add-ons until yesterday in the morning. And after now 5 hours of work, we've got a fully working product in Gmail.
That's amazing.
That's crazy. 2024. And it's only the beginning. I really see that evolving super fast. I think that now the most important thing is to be able to talk to the machine, to explain the structure, the architecture of what you expect, and to be clear in your head about the code has to be developed for the pages to interact, for the elements to interact together. And if it's clear in your head, and if you can explain it clearly to the LLM, it's just magic.
It is like magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you've surely heard about TalkPython's online courses, but have you had a chance to try them out? No matter the level you're looking for, we have a course for you. Our Python for Absolute Beginners is like an introduction to Python plus that first year computer science course that you never took. Our data-driven web app courses build a full PyPI.org clone along with you right on the screen. And we even have a few courses to dip your toe in with. See what we have to offer at training.talkpython.fm or just click the link in your podcast player. So you can see on the side here, I have these really weird recent chats I had, like a skilled baker Q&A and survive a plane crash in the wilderness. Uh-huh. And so these things are actually related. And what I was trying to do was I was trying to understand how much prompt engineering and sort of setting the stage for the questions matters. So like this one, I said, you are a very skilled baker. You have run a successful restaurant in the city for 5 years. Now I will ask you questions. As opposed to this one, you are a very skilled outdoorsman and you've been on multiple reality shows. Now I'll ask you some questions. And they were both the same question. If I'm in a plane crash and I need to survive, I wanted to see how much the baker would focus on food and stuff versus the survivalist on others. And I feel like, that's a real clear way to understand this kind of stuff in just a real general way. But I think there must be a code aspect of that as well. Like, rather than just tell me how to do this in Python, you have written this app in Python, or you're an expert on Fast API. Now I want to talk to you. You may get different results, maybe better, maybe worse. I don't know. But did you try any of this techniques, or was it just straight down the middle? Tell me how to do this with Tailwind.
To be fair with you, because I was a total newbie in the beginning, I was making sure to ask the AI to explain to me almost as if I were a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Because I could have told the AI, you're an expert Python developer, and then just give me the code. But then I don't have all the explanations, because then it behaves like an expert Python developer, and there are many shortcuts that it will take and not really give you all the details, documenting all the code. So I'm still, more like in a explain to me in layman's terms, how to do this. Because then also I understand the code, so it's easier for me to debug it. I usually take the analogy that when you said that sometimes you think it might be too late to learn to code or to learn to do something. Let's say that you want to learn to play music, to play the piano. At a certain age, it becomes very difficult because you don't have the reflex, the muscles, agility that you can have when you are a young kid to learn how to play the piano. But still, you could understand what's on the score written on the page from the music. So in coding, for me, it's kind of the same. I would, to be honest with you, I would not be able to write most of the code that is in my app myself, but I can read the score and I can see the connections between the different building blocks in the code. So I can understand if there's a problem, a syntax issue, because there's some, closing brackets that are not properly closed, something like that. I can see it. I wouldn't be able to write the code properly in the first place myself. And you could argue it's a problem, but I say, for me, the output is what matters. It's the final product, which is what matters. So as long as I understand what's on the screen, for me, it's okay.
Yeah, well, let's loop it back to the original way we started this. One way you could do this is you could hire people to build this for you, and then they give you the code and you're in the same position. Like, here's a huge pile of code and you probably understand it. I'm sure you understand it less well than if you went through step by step and built. I'm 100% sure.
I was in that position a few times where I was involved in some projects and I was not involved in the actual coding of the project. And then I inherited the project. I had the code base, but I could just put it on a shelf because I would not be able to do anything with that. Whereas now I understand every single section of what's written in the app. So at the moment, I'm repurposing some of the payment logic because I will switch from Stripe to Paddle in the AI Jingle Maker. And so I've got to rebuild the payment models. I've got to rebuild the Flask route for the API endpoints for the payment confirmations and all of that. So I know where they are and I know what they do. So I know how to tweak them. And I can highlight exactly what I want. And then now I'm using, I would say 75% of the time, I'm using GitHub Copilot straight in the IDE directly, because it's in context then. You highlight the code and then if the suggestion is nice, you just insert it to replace the code. So yeah, once you've got something that you understand, it goes faster and faster.
Yeah, and you're still early in this project, right? This is
super early.
5-6 months or something.
Like a baby.
Yes, I imagine as you do more of this, you might not choose to write a lot of code, but I bet you'll start to be able to write code, kind of like language immersion. If you move to Brazil, you would start to learn Portuguese.
Yes.
Eventually, just because you're in that environment so much,
But sometimes really, with the suggestions, you wouldn't see why you would write the code. For instance, I had earlier today, I was creating a scraper to check the technology used by different websites by looking in the source code for, let's say, a WP for WordPress, Odoo for Odoo, Squarespace, Weebly, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
We just wrote together with the AI the first part, and then we had to replicate the code in beautiful soup for the scraper for each of them. There's absolutely no reason why I would write each iteration. And once you write two of them, then you, with Copilot, you just go with your tab to the next section and will understand that what you expect, because you've got like three or four different technologies that you want to track in your code that you declared before, they will have to write a block of six lines. Boom, that's the block of six lines. There's no reason in the world why I would write those six lines, you know?
Amazing.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
One more prompt engineering thing you talked about, and I think it is a problem. So I asked basically, what's the boilerplate? And it said, boom, here's the boilerplate for Flask and ChatGPT. Then I said, well, how do I use a template? And it said, boom, here's the two pieces of code. And you said, sometimes this can be really challenging. You said one of the techniques used was to explain to me like a five-year-old. Another thing that works really well is I just said, tell me this again, let's think step by step. And it gave me a 10-step process. Start one, install Flask, create a project directory, create the project script, import Flask. And it was really much more like, this is what each step you need to do. And
yes,
and things like that are really neat.
When you really start learning, it's nice to do it step by step, because you know, some people, they don't understand, and that's quite normal. I would say that you've got to install those libraries before using them, that simple things like that. So in the beginning, it's nice to go step by step, indeed.
It's really powerful, and it's something people can check out. You know, there's a cool video. That's your channel. This one is the one I was looking for.
Yeah.
Prompt Engineering 101 by Patrick Lobier. And yeah, it's like a 14-minute video. It talks through, has a bunch of advice from places like Anthropic and others. And like, here is how you go and some things you can try.
It's also evolving, thanks also to the longer context windows that we have today in the LLMs. Because when I started doing that in 2022, the context window was maximum 4,000 tokens or something like that. So you had to really go by short sections. And it was very difficult to debug long pieces of code, long sections of code. Now the token window is 128,000 on OpenAI, and it's even longer on Claude or other LLMs.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it's possible to basically throw at some point 750 lines of code in or 1,000 lines of code in the LLM and get some refactoring, debugging. That's also really amazing. When you need, let's say you know that you created something cool in one app, some business logic, something interesting, but you know that you want to just repurpose it in a small way, like make little tweaks. You just throw all the code into the LLM and you just explain the little changes that you want, and it will give you the adapted code fully functional in one go, one shot, which is also impressive.
That is super impressive. So it sounds like you use Google Copilot a lot. Have you looked at GPT Engineer?
Nope.
So I haven't really either, but it basically, it's supposed to be kind of an iterative thing that goes, it will generate all the multiple files for you and then like try to understand how all those pieces fit together and work. And so
more like an agent logic.
Yeah, exactly. So, but pretty.
I started working with the GPTs from OpenAI, from ChatGPT. I created a few of them. It was a funny one. For instance, I'm working for an accounting firm for some marketing, and the boss of the company sent me a document of 350 pages explaining the accounting module on Odoo, which is an ERP system, 2 weeks ago. And he said, oh, you should read that to be able to understand it and answer questions about the module. And I just threw it into ChatGPT, uploaded the PDF, and I created a custom GPT. So now I can ask the custom GPT questions about the accounting module. So,
oh, that's insane.
Instead of reading the... And also another nice use case that I have, it's nothing about coding, but sometimes you're just on YouTube and someone tells you, this is the five big important things you have to know in 2024, which would change your life forever. You say, I'm tempted. Maybe I will watch this video because it might be interesting. But then you say, no, it's probably not that interesting. It's probably a lot of fluff. So now usually what I do is that I've got a website called, I don't remember the name, sorry, but one of the websites where you can get the transcript of a video. So I go get the transcript, throw it into ChatGPT, and then I ask, what are the five important things I should know that will change my life forever in 24? And then I've got them in 5 seconds. I don't need to watch a 35-minute video.
And then maybe you decide to watch it later, but at least maybe. Can filter it, right? Yeah. Awesome. What an interesting story, Fred. I think maybe we should wrap it up, but people can check out AIJingleMaker.com. I'll put that in the show notes. There's two other things from you that are noteworthy. One is you have your AI Coding Club newsletter. Do you want to tell people about that?
Yeah, that's a newsletter I started, which is connected to some of the videos I posted on YouTube, where I will explain to people how to use AI for coding purposes. I will start sending the newsletter soon, actually. I started registering people, but I haven't sent the first edition yet, but I will start very soon. I've got also a new app, as I said, coming up probably within 2 weeks. It will be called the AI Showmaker. It's a way to create a podcast or a radio show with building blocks. So it's the same concept as the Jingle Maker, but for longer form.
That sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
All right, cool. People can check it out here. Hey, and by the way, I've been thinking a lot about email and newsletters and stuff. I was doing a bunch with MailChimp for many, many years, and it's just got to be super, super expensive. And I got frustrated with them. So did a bunch of research on different platforms, looked at buttondown.email, and actually chose ListMonk, which is self-hosted and Docker style thing. But one of the ones that I came across at the end is Beehive, which looks pretty interesting. Are you happy with Beehive?
It's more competing with Substack. I think it was co-created by one of the guys who co-founded Morning Brew, the newsletter Morning Brew. So he knows what he's talking about. And it's really also really well coded, really well executed. It's a pleasure to use. You can use it for free for up to 2,500 subscribers. Yeah, that's it. So yeah, it's a good one.
The pricing is way, way better than things like MailChimp and stuff. So it's nice.
Also cheaper than Substack. So they don't, I don't know which cut they take from the subscription if you run a premium newsletter, but it's much cheaper than a Substack. I think Substack takes 10% from like Patreon and other platforms like that.
Nice. All right. And then one other thing is your Call Me Fred
YouTube channel. Yeah, I've got some videos there. Some of the videos are explaining how to use the Jingle Maker, the recent ones, but also some of them are about this journey of how to code with AI. There are some concrete examples also, like I coded recently a Chrome extension, a bookmarking Chrome extension. All the code, the explanations is on YouTube and the code on GitHub. So I've got different projects like that. And I'm usually documenting what I do on YouTube.
Yeah, nice. So people can check that out. All right. Well, I think that about does it for the time that we got together, but thanks for coming on and sharing your story. I think it'll inspire a lot of folks.
Thank you. I hope that everything was clear, that I wasn't cursed to be too cryptic like the developers I was talking about. But so it's really exciting. It's rejuvenating, as you could say, even.
It's opened up a whole world of possibilities, right?
I wish I would have started earlier, to be honest, because when I see my son, he's 18, and what he, you know, what he already does today with Python, that's quite amazing. So when you're 18, imagine where you will be when you will be 48 or 49. It will be like really good. So that's the beauty. That's the beauty of it. So don't wait too long if you're young, if you're listening to the podcast. Start today or yesterday even.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Awesome. Well, totally agree. Thanks so much for being here and see you later.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. This has been another episode of Talk Python to Me. Thank you to our sponsors. Be sure to check out what they're offering. It really helps support the show. Mailtrap, an email delivery platform that developers love. Try for free at mailtrap.io. Want to level up your Python? We have one of the largest catalogs of Python video courses over at Talk Python. Our content ranges from true beginners to deeply advanced topics like memory and async. And best of all, there's not a subscription in sight. Check it out for yourself at training.talkpython.fm. Be sure to subscribe to the show, open your favorite podcast app, and search for Python. We should be right at the top. You can also find the iTunes feed at /iTunes, the Google Play feed at /play, and the direct RSS feed at /RSS on talkpython.fm. We're live streaming most of our recordings these days. If you want to be part of the show and have your comments featured on the air, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel at talkpython.fm/YouTube. This is your host, Michael Kennedy. Thanks so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Now get out there and write some Python code.